If you don't pay competitive rates, the person you hire will keep looking outside, and it's only a matter of time before they leave you. So that could be one reason why you might find good people, you hire them, but they don't last in your business. Because remember, people talk. These guys have friends, they have colleagues, they have peers. They're going to be comparing themselves, and it's not going to be long before they find out that they can get a better deal outside. And then the third point is, don't micromanage them. Good people usually need their freedom to use their initiative and express their creativity. And when you stifle them and they feel like you are breathing over their necks, they might actually even leave you for another place that pays a lower salary but gives them the freedom and the flexibility.
Every big thing starts small. It's a natural law. Every big multinational corporation was once a small business. Welcome to the Small Starter Business Podcast, a unique podcast for practical tips and advice to help you start, grow, or turn around your business.
Hello, welcome to another interesting episode of the Small Starter Business Podcast. I am your host, as usual, John Paul Iwoha. Today we're going to be talking about a different and interesting topic. And what I find most fascinating about this topic is that it came up organically in a conversation I was having with a friend. And today's episode is really about human talent, human resources. Now, in my experience working with dozens of entrepreneurs who are at different stages of starting or growing their businesses, even very mature businesses, when it comes to problems, like the biggest problems that business owners face, the biggest problems that entrepreneurs face, right after finance and capital and funding, right after the problem of I need money to start my business or grow my business or expand my business, right after funding, the very next biggest headache that most business owners have is human resources. How to find, hire and keep good employees. So that's like the second biggest challenge that many businesses face. So I'm always fascinated when I find those few businesses in Africa who have done a good job of finding the right people, hiring the right people, and most importantly, keeping the right people. Because sometimes you can find good people, but then keeping them around might be the problem. Maybe they quit after a couple of months or a couple of years on the job, after you've invested time and money to train them and you've gotten used to them. So they just abandon you, and they are all like machines. Human beings can make up their minds and move. They can accept a better offer somewhere. They can go work for your competitor, or they can even resign and go start their own business, you know? So I find it very interesting when I find those entrepreneurs who have been able to crack this problem. And last week, I was having a conversation with a friend. He's actually a family friend. We are related through marriage. And what actually brought up this conversation was he's in Europe. He's in the UK right now. He traveled over to the UK to go see his wife. And I was quite surprised because the kind of business he runs is a very hands-on business. He runs a logistics company. Actually, he's into the supply of diesel products to companies, organizations that need the diesel for their backup power. And every time I've seen him on the road, he's always in his truck with his driver. So he has like this, I think he has about two trucks, but I know he's a very hands-on person. He's always on the road. So I was quite surprised to learn that he was in London. And, you know, the very first question I asked, the very first thing I blotted was, so what's happening with your business? Now that you're in the UK, does it mean your business is, you know, at a halt? He said no, that his business is running normally. Nothing has changed. You know, he's still receiving calls. He's still making calls. His truck is on the road. His customers are being served, you know. And the only difference for him is that he's being charged the high tariff charges on phone calls because he's roaming his line. So that was what started the conversation. And I wanted to know how this entrepreneur, who is a very hands-on person, runs a business that requires close supervision, was able to leave his business in Lagos in Nigeria, travel all the way to the UK, and then nothing changed. The business is still running, all of that. Because now, for those who don't know, the reason why I am particularly fascinated by his kind of business is that if you've ever run a transportation company or a logistics company, more or less you run a company where you have to rely on drivers or riders, you know that the major weak point of such a business is the people you work with, your drivers and your riders. They can kill that business or they can make it succeed. So it's one of those unique businesses that rises and falls on the quality of your human resources. So some businesses can get away with poor human resources, especially when you're working with machines or you're into software. You know, machines follow instructions. They don't get sick. They don't change their mind. They don't play games, you know. But then when you are in a service business and then you rely a lot on your human resources, then it requires a different set of skills. So this conversation, of course, was precipitated by my conversation with him. And then I started asking him a couple of questions. I asked him, so your drivers, typically, how long do they stay with you? And I'm asking this question because I know that drivers are very mobile in their job positions. They can work here and then easily go work for somebody else. You know, he said his last driver was with him for 5 years. I was like, are you kidding me? You had a driver for 5 years. How come? So I kept on prodding so I could find out what the unique secrets are, how he's able to hold on to his drivers for so long, and to see if there are any lessons that we can learn. So how did he do it? And I'm glad to tell you that that's exactly what this episode is predicated on. From my conversation with him, he's a seasoned entrepreneur. He's always been in the streets. He's been doing this now for almost a decade. So he knows his stuff very well. I was able to distill from our conversation 6 very unique tips that we can all use and benefit from in our businesses. You know, 6 things I learned from this guy that we can apply in our businesses to better manage our human resources, specifically as to when it concerns how you find good people, good employees, how you hire good employees, and most importantly, how you keep good employees. So the rest of this episode will be dedicated to these 6 interesting points I learned from him. So the very first thing I learned from our conversation is that he focuses on only hiring good and experienced performers, people who have proven their skill and their knowledge on the job. And there is one interesting thing that came out from our conversation. He said, anybody who is good enough for you to hire them, anybody who really knows what they're doing, those people already have jobs. They are not looking for jobs. They are not unemployed. Because they are good, they already have a job. And anybody who they are working for is likely going to want to hold on to them because they can recognize the talents that they are. So he says he doesn't bother himself with looking at people who are unemployed or people who are looking for a job. He focuses on people who already have jobs. And then what he does is he tries to woo or poach them. Because the truth is, the good performers are in short supply. So all the employers out there, when they see good talents, they know them and then they try to retain them. So what he does is he identifies a good talent who is working for his competitor or working for some other company. And then he targets them and tries to woo them. And then the reason why this happens, because as you can imagine, it is more expensive to woo somebody who already has a job compared to hiring somebody who is looking for a job. Somebody who is looking for a job may be out of options. They desperately need the job. So it's not going to cost you a lot. But if you're going to woo somebody who already has a job, it's going to cost you much more. But in the long run, what that strategy does, I mean, the strategy of hiring people who are already good performers, who are already working somewhere, is that it's going to save you a lot of cost, a lot of headaches, and a lot of mistakes. Because when you work with capable people, you don't need to go through the same learning curves. You don't need to keep hand-holding them. All that's delayed because when you hire incompetent people, you're likely going to suffer for the first few months or even the first few years, where you're just paying somebody a salary and then you're not seeing the results of what you're paying for. But when you hire good performers, what happens is that they can start delivering results in the shortest possible time. So that is one interesting tip I learned from him. Hire a good and experienced performer. And most times, those people are not looking for a job. They already have a job. They're already working somewhere. So you need to try to woo them. So that's the first tip I got. The second tip I got from our conversation, which lasted almost, 45 to 50 minutes, is to pay competitive compensation. So I found it surprising that his business is a small business, you know, is a small business, and he's paying above the industry average. And, you know, so I try to rationalize it. It's costing you more. Why would a small business pay more for a driver? And he said, look at it this way. Without this driver, this business falls. So the driver is essentially the fulcrum of the business. So if I know that that is my weakest position, I'm going to do my best to safeguard it. And then the interesting thing it does is that it reduces the temptation of looking outside. Because the thing is, human beings are unpredictable. So when you hire somebody, you can't just assume that they are not going to be looking outside. You can be sure they are looking outside because they have conversations with their colleagues, with their friends, with their peers. They are comparing salaries. They are comparing compensation. And then before you know it, if you're not paying a competitive wage, they are easily going to know by the time they talk to one or two of their friends. But then when the pay is above average, when your pay is competitive, it reduces the temptation to look outside because more or less they already have likely the best that the market can offer. The second important thing that paying a competitive compensation does for you is that it reduces the temptation for your competitors to poach your people. So especially in many parts in Africa, business owners have this habit of paying peanuts, as the employees will call it. Now, as somebody who works with entrepreneurs, I understand why that is happening. Payroll costs, the cost of salaries and wages is a significant cost when it comes to running a business. So I understand why you try your best to reduce that to an amount that, you know, more or less you're paying them enough to hold on to them, right? But the thing is that when you pay above average compensation, you reduce the temptation for your competitors and outsiders to come and poach your people because you're already paying more than they can afford. So essentially what that means is that anybody who's coming to poach your person has a higher bar that they need to scale because you're already paying above market. So they need to be much more competitive. They have to offer something that either matches what you currently pay or is better than what you already pay, which is likely higher than the industry average. So when I pressed him more to understand what he means by above market, that he pays market average, he gave me this example, this specific example. He said, if for example, there are 10 competitors of which he's a part, you know, he and his competitors, assume that there are 10. He says he pays what he's among the top three in terms of salaries to drivers, you know, and then it's a small industry. They all know themselves, like when they go to the depot to go to get their shipment of diesel, all the business owners and even the drivers, they have their conversations. And that is where they compare their pay and their compensation structure and stuff like that. So he says, you know, the top three people in terms of payments, he's in there, and it's a small business. So I found that really instructive that sometimes you may cut down payroll costs. You may cut down the cost of salary and wages because you want to save money and optimize profits. But in the long run, it turns out to be you're robbing Peter to pay Paul. That's exactly what it is. And I found that interesting that he was using that that strategy. The third interesting tip I learned from our conversation is that he actually sounded this several different times. He said he tries his best not to micromanage. Now, so by micromanaging, what he meant was, you know, always looking over their shoulder, monitoring every single movement they make, being overly suspecting, always wanting to know what that is. And so he says he doesn't micromanage. And the reason is that when you hire a good person, somebody who knows what they do, somebody who has good skills and has experience and is knowledgeable about the job you've hired them for, that those kinds of people do well when there's freedom for them to express their initiative and creativity. So they thrive when you give them the freedom to bloom and express themselves with their work, right? So interestingly, what he says is when you micromanage, you kind of demotivate them because they just feel like you don't trust them enough to do their job. Another thing he mentioned, which I found quite controversial, is that he leaves room for tricks that don't harm the business. So even though he didn't give me specifics, but he alluded to something to say that there are some tricks that the drivers play. Maybe when they go to offload diesel for a client, there are some they can play with the meter or something, just all these little things that the client is unlikely to know about. But then I came back to him. I said, if they are doing that, is that not harming your business? Actually harming your business in two ways. Are they not robbing you of profits? And then are they not likely going to cause you the reputational damage with your clients? He says, no, that these are only things that an insider would understand, somebody who is within the industry. So he doesn't like to play too much around that. And then I found it strange. I found it controversial. Why would you willingly allow your employees to play games that may likely not benefit you? And then what he said is, there is no amount of salary, at least that is reasonable within the industry. There is no amount of salary you pay these guys that will be enough. They usually make money from the side, from all the things that they do on the side. And if you don't give them the freedom to do that, they would even, he has seen instances where they may even leave your employment and go to somewhere else that pays them a lower salary, but that gives them the room and the freedom to do all those tricks that they do. So that's why he doesn't micromanage, because he likes to let them do the job. And, you know, one thing too I found interesting was that the last time I saw him when he was around, before he went to London, is that I always noticed that from time to time he rides in the truck. So there's a driver and then he's in the cabin and then they have a tanker full of diesel. And I was always wondering, you know, okay, he's a hands-on person and stuff like that. But then he says he lets them do their job. He's never threatened, even when maybe there is a case of reckless driving or he doesn't like something that they're doing, he resists the temptation to take over from them. So, you know, he just leaves them to do their job and, you know, just maintaining that separation that it's your job, I'm the boss, and, you know, things like that. So that's the third tip I learned from him. Don't micromanage good people. When you have good people, give them the freedom to express their initiative, to use their initiative and express their creativity. The fourth interesting thing, I told you there are six of them I made note of while we were having this conversation. The fourth thing I noticed is he says that he tries to get to know their social space. In my thinking, I called it getting to know their social anchors. So this is what he said. He said, for example, he likes to know where they live and the significant people in their lives. So it's likely the wife. He will know the wife of the driver, the partner, the kids, the family, and if it's possible, the neighbors. Now, the reason for this is, besides the background checks you have to do before you hire somebody for an important position, of which in a logistics business, in a transportation business, the driver is a very important role. Before you hire somebody for that kind of role, you should have done your background checks. And it's almost impossible to do background checks without finding out where does this person live, who is related to him, who is the next of kin, who can I call if I can't reach him, or if he runs away with my truck or gets involved in fraud and I can't find him, who can give me valuable information that I can use or that the security forces can use. So I found that quite instructive. And then he says he tries to put a human face to the business. He tries to be gracious and give personal time. So maybe somebody has lost somebody and needs time to grieve, or maybe there's a major social event. The person just had a baby, there's a naming ceremony, or maybe a close relative has a wedding. He tries to put a human face to that, because he thinks that when he gets too strict, or his experience, he's noticed it with other players, that when you get too strict with your drivers, they can now start to play games on you. So if they know that you're so strict that you won't allow them go for that important ceremony or that wedding or an important event in their lives, they're going to start coming up with stories and lies. They start lying to you. They start calling you to tell you that they are sick, you know, or they've been in an accident. They start to lie to you because they feel that you're not going to, if they tell you the truth, you will not accede to what they're asking you for. So at least within the limits of reason, you need to put a human face to it so that you are approachable and then they can tell you things the way it is, knowing that they won't be punished for it or that there wouldn't be any backlash. Now, that's the fourth point. The fifth point I learned from our conversation is quite an interesting example, I would say, for somebody who runs a small business. He says he makes it a point of duty to get involved in the work. And the moment he said that, it made sense to me all of a sudden. No wonder I always see him in his trucks. Even though there's no reason for that. The customers call him and then he can dispatch the truck. Why be in the truck? He says he's not in the truck all the time, but he's in there sometimes. And he says that the reason he does that is he doesn't want his employees to feel like he's a stranger. So he wants to be right there on the front lines of the business. He's like the general. He's like the army general who is in the trenches with his soldiers. So he rides with the truck so that he can understand the pains and challenges of the job. So that when the driver complains or something comes up, he doesn't just listen to it as a boss. He can feel it because he's been on the front lines. He knows what they're talking about. For the reason of being on the front lines, he can feel that thing that many bosses may not be able to feel because they're not on the front lines. And that is empathy. And empathy means that you can put yourself in the other person's shoes to feel what they feel the pinch exactly where it pinches. So he says it's something he does. And then what that does by showing up on the front lines and sometimes getting involved in the work, even though you have paid this person to do the job. One added benefit is that it starts to position you in the mind of your employees as a partner. You know, you're a partner. You're a partner who gets involved, who cares about what they're doing. You're not just a boss who sits back at the office and is expecting money to come into the bank account while your employees are under the sun, slaving away. So the truth is, it's just human nature. You've hired somebody, you're paying them a salary, you're compensating them for the work that they do. But there is still that human side to be, you know, who the hell do you think you are? Because you're my boss, you know, you're sitting back and then we're doing the work. So you have no idea what it means to walk in my shoes, to sit where I am, you know, that sort of thing. So this may not work in every kind of business, but I just thought it was interesting that I get this perspective from somebody who runs a business, which is a hard business. If you've ever run a transportation or logistics business in Africa, you will know it's a very difficult business. So, for example, he says that, you know, the one common challenge they face is dealing with the police on the roads, right? You have all sorts of uniformed officers on the road. And sometimes even having your full and proper documentation is not enough. So I said, you must be kidding me. Do you have all your documentation? He said he has all the documentation from the vehicle license to everything. Everything is complete. But that's not the point. The officials can frustrate you. They can just tell you they are going to run a couple of tests or they are running something at the head office. And then they delay you. Meanwhile, your client is waiting for their supply of diesel. And if they don't get their supply of diesel, they cannot run the generator to support their business. And things can go bad. So they are on the clock. They have to be there in time so that they don't disappoint their customers. But then to the police, it's not their business. They are going to delay you and frustrate you for as long as they can. As long as, you know, you just have to... You have to be friends with them, whatever that means. So he says that there's no way to understand these things except he's on the road with the drivers. So right now, most of the police people already know them. And then he says the feeling is different when the boss is right there. The driver feels safer that, you know, there won't be as much trouble because my boss is here, my guy is here, you see, that sort of thing. So I found it quite instructive because... For me, I was thinking, if you have your complete papers, there shouldn't be a problem. You show the police and then they let you go. But then this is one of those things where the theory is different from practice. In practice, it doesn't work that way. They can delay you because they know you're on the clock, because they know you need to get somewhere urgently. They can delay you as some form of tactic to get something from you, right? So I found that quite interesting. And the sixth point I learned from what he said was, I said, you run such a business that is high touch. You need to be on the road. You need to constantly monitor your drivers. Anything can go wrong. How are you sitting in the UK and you're comfortable that everything is going okay? And then that's where this point came up. So he's not a business, he's not a consultant like I am. He's not a specialist in business matters. He just knows what he knows. So I had to curate most of the things I'm sharing with you. So it may not be his exact words, but what I thought I heard as the sixth point is that you can trust the person, you trust the employee, but then trust and business controls have to go together. So it's not just enough to trust a good employee that they will do what is right. You have to use that thing called business control. So one example would be that he's in the UK, but then his truck has tracking. There's a tracking device on the truck. So he can monitor the location and activity of the truck remotely. So he logs onto his account on his phone, and he can know where the truck has been, where they are right now and stuff like that. Another kind of control is that his customers never pay the drivers. They don't pay for the diesel they buy to the driver. They don't even pay in cash. They pay directly to the company account. And then when the money comes in, of course, he's the CEO of the company, so he sees the money that comes in. So that's a form of control. Don't pay the driver. Don't give anybody cash. Pay directly to the account. The vehicle is monitored. The truck is monitored. He can tell where it's been and stuff like that. So the bottom line is that you can trust your people to do the right thing, but you need to have a way to verify. So let me say that again. You can trust your people to do the right thing, but you need to have a way, an independent way to verify. Because if you cannot verify, then how exactly do you know that your trust is being respected, that your trust is not being betrayed? So business controls are an independent way of verifying that your people are keeping faith and that they respect the trust that you've put in them. So let's just recap the 6 points I learned from this. I started this episode by telling you that besides raising money to start a business or grow a business, in my experience, the second biggest headache that many business owners have is finding the right people, hiring the right people, and keeping the right people. Human resources is a major problem. And I found this surprising initially, because like most people, I'm sure you already know this, the unemployment rate in many parts of Africa is really high. So if the unemployment is high, what it means is that you have many more people looking for jobs than there are available jobs. So I would imagine that when an unemployed person finally gets a job, they're going to do the best they can to keep that job by satisfying their boss and then providing as much value that justifies the compensation you're paying them. Apparently, in reality, you know, it doesn't work that way. A lot of people are unemployed, but you still have issues of incompetence, entitlement. People want to work. People don't want to work, but they want to get paid. And there's this whole thing about iService, where they only work when you are around, but when you're not around, they don't do anything. So all of these things are a combination of human resource problems. There's also the part of fraud. They're trying to steal from you at any opportunity that they get. You know, so finding trustworthy people, competent people who can do the job and deliver value for the company so that you can grow the company is a problem. So what that leads to is a situation where you now have entrepreneurs and business owners who are tied to their business. If they leave the business for 1 second, everything falls apart. Because the only person who has the interest of the company, the interest of the business at heart, is the business owner. Every other person is just filling up space. Right. So before I ramble on, let's just recap the 6 important pieces of advice I got from that conversation. The first is to hire a good and experienced performer. And if you remember what I said, most good people are not looking for work. They are not looking for jobs. They are already employed. So this, my friend's strategy is to target people who are already in jobs rather than hire people who are looking for a job. The second point is to pay competitive compensation. I remember I mentioned his business is a small business. I was actually surprised that he says that he pays higher than the market average because it's a small business. I would have thought it's only the big companies that can do that. But he said for him, it's a very sensible strategy. If you don't pay competitive rates, the person you hire will keep looking outside and it's only a matter of time before they leave you. So that could be one reason why you might find good people, you hire them, but they don't last in your business. Because remember, people talk. These guys have friends, they have colleagues, they have peers. They're going to be comparing themselves, and it's not going to be long before they find out that they can get a better deal outside. And then the third point is, don't micromanage them. Good people usually need their freedom to use their initiative and express their creativity. And when you stifle them and they feel like you are breathing over their necks, they might actually even leave you for another place that pays a lower salary but gives them the freedom and the flexibility that they want. The fourth point is to get to know their social anchors, right? Every person you hire has social anchors. It could be their family, it could be his wife or you know, the family, the neighbors. Where do they live? Who do they listen to? Who is important to them? All these things are important. And then also giving a human face to it. So it's not just 100% business. The person needs to travel for something, some important event. And then you are like, you know, that can't happen. If you keep doing that, your people are going to end up lying. They're going to keep lying to you because they know that telling you the truth doesn't give them what they want. The fifth point is to get involved in the work. So my friend says he would rather be the general who is with the soldiers in the trenches so that he can feel what they feel. And I agree with him, because it's only when you have walked the path that your people have walked, that's the only time you can have empathy. So you can put yourself in their shoes. You see what they see. You understand what they are going through. And then the sixth point is to trust, but to have business controls that can verify that things are working the way they should work. So trusting your people to do the right thing is not enough. You need an independent way to confirm that things are going well. And I give you a couple of examples here. Interesting thing is, I have these kinds of conversations all the time, especially with members of our insiders community. Sometimes you want to raise money, but then maybe the problem is something else. You want to raise money to grow your business. And then when I ask you, what are you going to use the money for? You say you're going to use the money to hire more people. And then I start to ask you a couple of questions. How many people have you hired so far? You've hired 5 people, and then most of those 5 people are not with you anymore. So what makes you think that if you raise more money and use part of that money to hire more people, the best you can do is to pay them a better salary? But in the end, having a higher salary is not the total solution. Sometimes there are things you're not doing right. It could be that you're micromanaging them. It could be that you don't understand, you don't have empathy, you know, things like that. And then raising money is not going to solve that kind of problem. You need to get to the root of the problem to be able to resolve what the problem is. And that's the benefit of being a member of the Insiders Program. By being a member of the Insiders Program, we can help you see beyond what you think your immediate problems are. Most times there are underlying problems. Most times there are root problems. And it only takes an experienced eye. And that's the benefit of belonging to a community of entrepreneurs who you have several people in the group who have walked beyond what you're doing right now. You have people who are starting their businesses. You have people who are growing their businesses. And you have people who have mature businesses that are trying to turn around those businesses. So it's an interesting point. If you become a member of the Insiders Program, and then you can think much more critically around the issues that you have in business beyond the surface things that may be apparent. So to learn more about the Insiders Program, you can check us out at smallstarter.com/insiders. Again, it is smallstarter.com/insiders. The other thing I wanted to bring to your attention is that if you've been listening to this podcast, you are getting real value from it. You are applying the things that you learn on this podcast and you're seeing real results. What I ask you for, you're not paying any money for this podcast. All I ask you for is to tell your smart friends about the Small Starter Business Podcast. Let them go to Google and search for the Small Starter Business Podcast. And then they can listen to our backlog of episodes. We cover everything from sales to raising money, things like human resources, business strategy, startup strategy, market entry, pricing, all sorts of problems that entrepreneurs typically face when they start their business or they're trying to grow their business. So tell your friends about the Small Starter Business Podcast and let them listen. And then if you've been listening for quite some time, I think it's time you give us a review. And I think a 5-star review will be totally in order. It will not just make me happy, but it will make it easier for other people to find the Small Starter Business Podcast on the podcast directory. And I need to mention again, if you'd like to work directly with me, if you would like to become a member of our exclusive community of entrepreneurs from over 20 countries who are building within and outside Africa, over 20 countries within and outside Africa who are building different kinds of businesses, then I implore you to become a member of the Small Starter or of the Insiders, which is our exclusive and private community for entrepreneurs within the Small Starter platform. So you can check us out at smallstarter.com/insiders. Again, it is smallstarter.com/insiders. So I had fun recording this episode, and my goal is to keep sharing practical stuff, because the truth is, most of the things we learn in theory may not apply on the ground. And it's very true in Africa. There are all sorts of nuances, there are all sorts of things that people in the streets go through that a classroom experience cannot help you with. So my goal is to continue to give you these practical tips so you can apply them in your business, get the results, and don't forget to let me know how anything you've heard on this podcast has been of help to you. So at this point in the episode, let's listen to our friends from Kweza. Kweza is a platform that helps African entrepreneurs access export markets. So if you're an SME in Africa, you produce goods that are locally sourced, and you're looking to sell those products in developed markets like North America, Canada, the US, and even Europe, Kweza is helping small businesses earn foreign exchange by being able to sell their products on foreign markets. So today he has an interesting story to share with us. Let's hear you, Maxwell.
Thank you, John Paul. Listeners of the Small Startup Business Podcast, it's great to have me once again. My name is Maxwell Adu. I'm the co-founder of Kweza. I like John Paul's question. I love to talk about success stories. So we have a seller on our platform who is called Abigoram. Abigoram is managed by Collins Ndashi from Cameroon. And what they do is they sell palm oil, honey, peanuts, specifically from Cameroon. Before Collins joined our platform, Collins had difficulty in sending samples of his product to the Middle East, to the US and Canada. And Collins also have problem of how can he display his product. So when they contact him, he needs to send them picture, maybe via WhatsApp or whichever way. Collins have problem in terms of payment. When Collins, even if Collins send a sample, they're not going to order the product because they don't know Collins. So it becomes an issue to pay Collins for his product, even if you send them the sample. So Collins is limited in terms of the market reach and how it connects with his buyer. So when Collins joined our Kweza platform, downloaded the app as a merchant, Collins is now able to tell the people who are buying from him, not even the new buyer now. I'm talking about people that are already doing business with Collins. They can now go on Kweza app. Collins can tell them, go to this thing, you'll see my product. Order the product. When you order, I can now ship to you directly. And you can also pay for the product. So Colin was able to ship his product to the US buyer. The US buyer has to order in large quantity from Collins. That is once. Collins was able to get a buyer from Kuwait, from Saudi Arabia, to buy his product on the platform. If there was no platform like Kweza, Collins would not have been able to sell his product, because the access to market, the global visibility that enable a business like Collins to trade is not there. Now, Kweza is that platform that enables Collins to connect with buyer from any part of the world, send sample, receive his payment. The buyer is happy. Collins is also happy.
Great. So you heard the man. This is really exciting. And then going forward, you're going to be hearing us here on the Small Starter Business Podcast talk a lot more about this amazing startup called Kweza and the interesting work it is doing to expand the reach of small businesses across the African continent. If a small business in Accra, Ghana, or in Lagos, Nigeria, or in Johannesburg, South Africa, can earn foreign exchange because they can export their products to America, to Canada, to the UK, to France, Imagine what that would do for trade and commerce on the African continent. And what I see is our own version of Alibaba or Amazon in the making. But then the interesting thing here is that being able to export to foreign markets is very important for SMEs. Africa is really losing a lot of potential because most of our small businesses don't have access to solid markets. And I see a lot of great promise coming from this. Until the very next episode, I'll be looking forward to sharing some other interesting, amazing tip that can push you another step forward on your business journey. Take care of yourself, stay safe, and I'll talk to you later. Cheers.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Small Startup Business Podcast. To take our free business courses or join one of our signature programs for special entrepreneurs like you, head over to smallstarter.com to join our private community. See you inside.